I've titled this Bible study, What is Our Point of View? Our world, I think you would agree, is a fairly complicated place and has become more complicated as time has gone on. Human race faces a lot of problems and there aren't simple solutions to those problems. If they were simple solutions, then things wouldn't be quite so challenging. But have you ever wondered why it is so hard sometimes to visualize in our own mind when we're going through a trial or a challenge, why it's so hard to visualize a way out? Sometimes it just seems like we're puzzled. What is the way out of this? Are we missing something? Or can it sometimes be just a matter of focus? That is, moving the camera a little bit of our mind to change our frame of reference or our point of view. So, since real human lives often give us the best vantage point from which to see a thing clearly, I want to examine four examples from the Bible, four individuals from the Bible, to help us better understand the importance of point of view and our point of view. So, let me ask you this first of all, what does point of view mean to you? How would you define point of view? And when somebody says, well, my point of view is, or what's your point of view? Bonnie? Your opinion? Certainly includes opinion. Anything else? Or is point of view? Dave? There is a great deal that can go into what makes up our point of view. Opinion is part of that. When you look up a definition, just definition of point of view, a couple of interesting statements about that. Point of view can be a particular attitude or way of considering a matter. A particular attitude about something or the way we consider a matter. Also, the position from which something or someone is observed. That is, we have a certain position, our opinion, or idea about something, and we look at a person or a situation from that perspective or from that position. Let's look quickly at four examples and think about each of these. And it's challenging and difficult to do this, but as much as possible in your mind's eye, put yourself in each of these situations. Just try to put yourself there. If this were happening to you, Genesis 37, and let's read beginning in verse 17. Again, try to put yourself in the shoes of these individuals, Genesis 37 and verse 17, the account of Joseph. And the man said to Joseph as he was looking for his brothers, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers, found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Recall Joseph's visions and the way they were not happy with the way Joseph had these visions and dreams. Then they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. We shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness. Do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him to his father. Later on, Reuben was going to come back and save him. It came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped him of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. You just stop right there for a moment. There you are, having just been thrown into a pit. Your precious garment taken from you, and you're thrown into a pit. What was going through Joseph's mind at that point? what would be going through your mind at that point? What could Joseph see? What could he focus on? Literally, you know, all he could see from the bottom of a pit was the sky, basically. He could hear his brothers talking. Could he understand all the words? We don't know. Were they arguing about something? Were they going to kill him? You didn't know. Put yourself in his shoes. What would it be like to be in that circumstance? Your point of view, all you can see is the sky and you hear them arguing and talking. Let's go to another example. Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1. And again, you're very familiar with the story of Job. Job chapter 1. And we just pick it up in verse 13. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters, Job's sons and daughters, were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. A messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing, the donkeys feeding beside them, when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven, burned up the sheep and the servants, and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. It fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. Interesting. There's a Sabbath Thoughts by Jeremy Lawyer this week about God who takes away. And he gives some examples. One of them is the example of Job. How do we respond when God takes away? Interesting Sabbath Thoughts. Well, let's read chapter 2, verse 7 and 8. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. He took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of ashes. Stop there. Again, put yourself in his shoes. What could he see? What could he feel? What could he focus on? What would cross your mind while sitting on a pile of ashes that maybe only slightly would cushion the pain of the boils from head to foot? What would you be wondering? I think we'd all be wondering, well, you know, what happened? Why? Is God dissatisfied with me? Is he punishing me? Why? What did I do? Now, what would be going through your mind if you're in this situation? Would death be preferable to this? You don't know all what's going on behind the scenes. You have a certain point of view that you're focused on. Another example, Esther. Back up one book to Esther 2. Esther chapter 2. What would be some of the questions you might have about this? Esther 2. And let's read beginning in verse 7. You're familiar again basically with the story of Esther, but here Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. He had reared her. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan, the citadel, under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women, the harem. Now the young women pleased him, and she obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her. Besides her allowance, then 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. Esther had not revealed her people or her family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. Every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. Put yourself in her shoes, especially ladies. Put yourself in her shoes. What questions might be coming to your mind at this point? Anybody? What thoughts, what questions might be coming to you if you were in that situation? Anybody want to? Men or women, Ada? Yeah, I don't want to be. Right. I don't want to be here. Could be something going through your mind. Again, from your point of view, all you can see is what your eyes are showing you. And I don't want to be here. Anything else? Dave? What am I going to do? Why am I here? Yes, I'm in the king's harem, but wouldn't I prefer to have one loving husband? Or, is there a need that I'll be able to help my family? I mean, thoughts going through your mind about, what's going on? Why am I, surrounded in this? Yes, it's pleasant and it's beautiful, but why am I here? Fourth one. This is the last example we'll look at. John 9, and then we'll kind of analyze a little bit. John 9, verses 1 and 2. Put yourself in his shoes. What would be going through your mind? John 9, verse 1 and 2. Now, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? What then was his point of view? He couldn't see anything. He was totally blind. And here Christ, he must have heard them ask this question. Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents that he was born blind? It makes you wonder what had public opinion already concluded about this man? What was on his mind? What would be on your mind if you were in his shoes at that point? Blind? You hear somebody ask, well, who sinned? This man? Everybody thought blindness in this case was the result of somebody's sin, either this man or his parents. That was kind of public opinion. What else might be on your mind as a blind beggar in this situation? Any other thoughts that might come to mind? Why me? Was I born in sin? Why did this happen to me? Is God displeased with me? Who's going to take care of me if, will my family look after me if my begging doesn't bring in enough? Am I going to be on my own? You got a lot of things going, are all the awful things I hear about me really true? There's got to be a lot going through your mind at a time like that. But here are four stories, centuries apart, with no apparent connection to each other, except one common thread weaving through each of their lives. I want to take a stab at what that common thread might be. What would be the common thread in all four of those stories? I can give you a clue. Anybody want to take a guess, Jeff? Faith. Okay. Helplessness. Faith. Anything else? Pardon? God's purpose. God involved in every one. Did any of these accounts happen by accident? Think about that. Did any of them happen by accident? Was there ever a time in any of them when God was not in charge? When God wasn't the one behind it? Was there a single moment that passed in the life of any of them without his knowledge or even his permission of the events that happened? No. I mean, there was a purpose in all of these lies. Each fulfilled a specific reason or purpose that God had in mind in each case. They couldn't see it. No, not from their point of view, from their vantage point, but still there was a specific point of view or purpose that was being fulfilled. There is another common thread. And what was it you said, VK? Helplessness. In a sense, that also is a common thread. That is, initially at the beginning, none of these people knew the reason behind the events in their lives. None of them were aware. None of them knew why. They all would be asking why. They're helpless, you know, in a sense. They didn't know why in each case. So, kind of step back for a moment. Let's look at this subject of point of view. This very moment, you and I are whirling around the sun at about, anybody know how many miles per hour the Earth is traveling around the sun? About 66,000 miles per hour the Earth is traveling around the sun. Are you dizzy? Probably not. Why? Why don't we, even though we're flying around the sun at 66,000 miles an hour, we're not dizzy. That's because, you know, the Earth is doing that. We're on the Earth. We're traveling with the Earth. And from our point of view, how do things look? Looks like the Earth is standing still. I mean, we don't feel anything moving and whirling around from our point of view. No, everything is still. What we can see, what we can feel from our frame of reference, our point of view, it seems as though everything around us, the universe, is doing all the moving. But here we are, flying around the sun, you know, at 66,000 miles per hour. Give you another example. Speed, for example, requires a frame of reference. That is, you can't just be going 75 miles an hour. Let's say you're stopped by a traffic officer, and he wants to know how fast you're going. You know, how fast do you think you're going? Well, slower than you, or you caught me. Or, you know, or faster than the guy next to me. I passed him. But if you say, well, I was going, you know, 75 miles an hour. In relation to what? In relationship to the ground, the surface of the earth. You have to be going certain speed in relationship to something else. The ground, the earth itself. The highway signs that say 70 mile an hour speed limit don't say speed limit 70 miles per hour in relation to the surface of the earth. That's all implied. Okay, that's all understood. In relationship to the ground or the surface, we're going 70 miles an hour. But what we experience, what we see, our frame of reference, you know, doesn't change any of that. You know, it all exists, whatever our point of view is, whatever our focus, our frame of reference. You know, I mean, unless you're a physicist or a scientist dealing with motion and speed, you probably never think about it. I never do, that I'm going 75 miles an hour in relationship to the surface of the earth. I don't think about that. I don't think about whirling around the sun at 66,000 miles an hour, unless it's on my mind for some reason because I'm teaching those subjects. You know, but here we are on this basically spaceship traveling through space at 66,000 miles an hour. But our frame of reference, our point of view, really we don't even think about that. We don't have a frame of reference or point of view that leads us to think so much about that. Go back to our four individuals. Joseph was in that pit for a purpose. The same for Job. He was on a heap of ashes for a reason. Esther was in the king's harem for a purpose. And the blind man begging on the side of the road was also there for a purpose. Yet from their vantage point, from their point of view, they felt helpless, as was said. Their situation looked hopeless. And we'd all be asking, why me? Why is God allowing this? Does God care? Has God forgotten me? Let's look at those again one by one. When did the picture become clear to Joseph what God's purpose was? When did Joseph really understand what was going on? Anybody? When his family came in. How long was that? Anybody remember about how many years it was? It was 22 years. 22 years had passed. He was sold as a slave at age 17, put in prison, serving Potiphar, brought before Pharaoh at age 30, according to Genesis chapter 37 and Genesis 41. 7 good years, and then years of famine that followed. And when his family came is when he was able to explain to them what it was all about. At age 39, that God would establish Israel in Egypt. But up until that point, you know, he didn't realize that God was using him to save the lives of Israel and the Egyptians. All those years went by, but God was with him every step of the way. Although that wasn't his point of view. What about Job? How would you analyze Job's situation? What happened there? The pieces didn't make sense. Until when? When did the pieces start to make sense for Job? Anybody remember what went on? Bonnie? When God started speaking to him, specifically, look at Job 38. And you remember the account of Job 38, verses 1 and 2. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me." And we look at Job 42 after this series of questions and God challenging him, Job 42. And remember, beginning in verse 2. Verse 1, Job answered the Lord and said, "I know that you can do everything and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You ask, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Listen, please, let me speak. You said, I will question you and you shall answer me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you, therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes." Once he understood, his humility came through. I think what's interesting, I've really never noticed this verse before, James 5 and verse 11. James 5 and verse 11. This kind of completely went over my head. James 5, verse 11. "Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful." For some reason, I just always read over without thinking about that phrase, "the end intended by the Lord." But how hard is that for humans to see? How hard was it for Joseph to see when he was going through it, the end intended by God? How hard was it for Job to see the end intended by God? Again, trying to put ourselves in those shoes, trying to think about our own lives, what we go through, what we experience, what we live, understanding God is working out a purpose. There is an end intended by God. And sometimes our attitude depends on our point of view, our focus, our frame of reference, how we look at things. What about Esther? What did Esther learn about her circumstances? You recall from her uncle Mordecai? Remember that famous statement that Mordecai made? Yes, Jeff? Yeah, look at that statement. It's in Esther 4 and verse 1. Esther 4, I'm sorry, verse 14. Esther 4 and verse 14. This is what Mordecai said to Esther, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this." Esther's story was not by accident either. It was to fulfill God's purpose. What about the blind man? What was going on with him? You better recall how, because Christ kind of shattered a cultural misconception when he explained what was going on, Jeff. Right. "Neither this man nor the parents have sinned," in John 9. Notice his statement in verse 3. Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." He would hear that too. Put yourself in his shoes. That, of course, he healed him. Christ healed him. This is where he mixed saliva with clay and healed the man's eyes. But he would have heard that too. "I was this way, not because of some evil that I did, or my parents, not because I was born in sin, not because I'm an evil person, but for the purpose of God." He would have heard Christ's statement as well. The entire incident was intended to show the works of God. And you have to think that maybe that healing might have shaken some in that community right to their core, who had this stereotypical view of the blind and the lame, etc. It's a different point of view, totally different focus when Christ healed him. None of these amazing stories happen by accident. And so again, we can all ask, what about the story of my life, your life, my life? How much of it by accident? You know, how has God been involved? How is he working out his purpose in our lives? You know, how many of the things that we look at as maybe an accident or happenstance or coincidence really weren't? You may not know the answer to a lot of those things till sometime in the future, but do all the pieces make sense yet? If they don't, to me, there are still things I wonder about. Why such happened, why it happened that way. All the pieces don't quite fit yet. All of health trials, job stresses, financial trials, relationship trials. You know, it's hard to make sense of all of it at this time. And yet we go on living the Christian life. When do all of the pieces come together? Certainly we would hope in the resurrection that we would understand then. But let's look at a few scriptures. Romans chapter 9. Maybe we can't figure out everything just yet. Neither could any of these four people whose lives we looked at. But God can. We just don't have the perfect point of view or frame of reference that God does. He has a perfect point of view, the perfect frame of reference. We don't yet. But Romans 9, verse 20. "But indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, 'Why have you made me like this?' Does not the potter have power over the clay from the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor? What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessel of wrath prepared for destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessel of mercy, which he had prepared beforehand for glory, even us, whom he called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles? God is the master potter. We are the clay. Who are we to question his purposes?" Are, you know, various things that we wonder about in our lives. James 1, there's some assurance here in James 1. And verse 2, 3, and 4, James 1. Verse 1, James, the bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greetings, my brethren. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Then it goes on to describe the work of patience and needing wisdom. But what I find comforting in these verses is that God is assuring us there is a reason. God has a reason for everything he allows. There is a purpose being worked out. If you haven't read our booklet, God's Purpose for You, is really an inspiring booklet. I recommend it often when I'm giving answers for PCD. Those who write about, I had somebody write about just the other day, asking a question about where does luck fit into my future? Interestingly enough, we have an article about superstition. It addresses the subject of luck. But I went on to say and point out, God has an amazing purpose. It isn't left to luck. God is working out a purpose, and I recommended that booklet, God's Purpose for You. But God assures us there is a reason for things that he allows. It may not be obvious to us now, or even in the year ahead, or several years, but the question is, do we trust God? Are we trusting in God? That statement in Hebrews 11, verse 1, which is a kind of a description more than a definition of faith. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Things not seen. The four people in the examples we looked at never read these words or what James wrote because they hadn't been written yet. But they lived these words. They lived having experience with things not seen, but having faith and trust in God. They all ultimately had to trust God. The path for Joseph to become second in command in Egypt began in that pit. He didn't know it, but that's where it all started out. The path for Job to have a deeper, more humble relationship with God really began on that heap of ashes. He didn't know it then, but if you remember, he refused to curse God. He said God should still be worshipped and honored. The path for Esther to royalty, to become the queen, and to rescue the Jewish people began in that harem where she probably didn't want to be. And the path for the blind man to a revelation about what God was really doing and God's incredible power and perfect will began with sightless eyes. He couldn't see. But yet God was working out a purpose in all four of those cases. So when these stories began, the end was not clear to any one of them. But who was the end clear to? God. The end was clear to God. It wasn't clear to any of them. But when they ended, they could probably look back and see the value in every step along the way. At least it would become more obvious. May not be any more pleasant what they had to go through, but each step became, I think, obvious as far as what God was doing. How does that relate to our life? I think directly, especially if we try to put ourselves in their shoes, we may not fully understand the path that we're on until it's over. And that's okay. We don't have to. I don't understand everything about the path that God has led me down. I appreciate, I'm thankful for the path of my life. I look back at things that I think I've told a story before, an injury that I had playing football in John Carroll University in Cleveland, Ohio, that injured my knee, tore a cartilage, that I considered a curse. But in the year that followed, I was being called into the church, and that injured knee kept me out of the draft for a year. And I was able to go to Ambassador College instead of going into the Army during the height of Vietnam. I look back at it now and realize, in a way, that was a blessing. An injury that still has plagued me through the years, but still was a blessing in many ways. So we don't always understand our path until it's over. We don't necessarily have to right now. God does. God does, and that's supposed to be enough for us, that we trust God that he's working out his purpose according to his will. So what is the scripture that says, how do we walk? We walk what? By faith. We walk by faith, not just by sight. And our stories of the stories of our lives are not happening by accident. I think that's something we can take comfort in and trust God that we are in his hands, and our point of view is not yet perfect. Someday it will be, but God does have the perfect point of view and the perfect frame of reference. So what is our point of view? I think it's important to think about that at times, especially when we're going through a trial. Anyway, that concludes the Bible study. Any comments or observations about that anybody wants to add? I hope the stories and the illustrations help and makes us think a little bit about our point of view. And when we, if you were here last week, you heard the sermon by Mr. Levy about praying for 1 hour. Excellent sermon. Very good. I hope that gives you some food for thought about how to accomplish that. And in talking to God about his point of view, asking his point of view to be more, our point of view to be more and more like his point of view.